For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Welcome to the MJA podcast. This podcast is recorded and produced on the lands of the Djabal and Djerriwarr peoples. I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of this land, their elders past, present and emerging. Last week, the publishers of the Medical Journal of Australia and Insight Plus announced that Professor Ginny Barber will take over as Editor-in-Chief in January of 2023. Professor Barber comes to the role with a storied career in medical publishing and as an international expert in open access systems. She was one of the founding editors of PLOS Medicine and is currently the Director of Open Access Australasia. She will take over the job from Laureate Professor Nick Talley, who will step down at the end of the year after 7 years in the role, during which he oversaw the increase in the journal's impact factor to an all-time high of 12.776 and over 1.4 million article downloads in 2021 alone. It was my pleasure to sit down with Ginny Barber for a chat about her vision for the MJA going forward. Congratulations on your appointment. I know we're all excited. Are you excited?
I'm really excited to be joining the MJA, yes. The majority of my career before I came to Australia was working in medical publishing. I worked at The Lancet and then was one of the editors that started PLOS Medicine. So I'm really passionate about medical journals and the good that they can do. So I'm extremely excited to be getting back into medical publishing again.
And what was it about the MJA that drew you in?
Well, I've always thought that national medical journals have a really unique role to play. And to be honest, I think sometimes at journals which are international, they're a little bit jealous of national medical journals because they can rightly have a view on the national issues of the time. And I think when they really are kind of working to their best, they can be very influential in both political and public health policy. So I really value that opportunity. And that's what I would love to see the MJA doing when I get the chance to take over.
Do you have interest in things like impact factor and citations, or is it about helping doctors on the front line and patient outcomes?
It's absolutely about helping doctors on the front line, patient outcomes, public health outcomes, and impact in its much wider sense. My position on impact factors is really clear. I think they're a very poor metric of a journal, particularly when they're only considered on their own. And I would want to see really the journal looking at its impact overall. There are many, many more important things that a journal can do than think about one number, particularly the impact factor, which we know is so problematic. So, who's the journal being read by? Where's it being cited in policy documents? How much reach does it have in changing policy in practice nationally and internationally? That's the type of impact that I will be looking for the journal.
Let's talk about open access, because obviously you're an international expert on open access and its importance. Where are we at in Australia in context and the MJA in particular? We're a society-owned journal. What does that mean for open access and what we should be doing?
So I think the MJA is very typical of many society journals at this point, and that is it's challenging to make journals like the MJA open in a way that both ensures their long-term sustainability but also ensures that they can fully embrace open access. Mm-hmm. So again, this was one of the things that really appealed to me when taking this job. There's no doubt for me that we are moving along a trajectory where open access is absolutely going to be the outcome. The question is just how we get there and how quickly we get there. As we saw just a couple of weeks ago, the United States, the Office of Science and Technology Policy from the US White House, put out an edict that all federally funded research in the US must be made open access by 2026. And in Australia already, we have a number of moves that are going in that direction. We know that our chief scientist, Dr. Kathy Foley, is looking at that quite closely, and the NHMRC and the ARC have open access policies. So I think it's fair to say that this is a topic of great interest. Australia needs to probably move a little bit quicker than it could be doing, but I think for the MJA, there's no question that we want open access. We want that research to be read. It needs to be used and reused by just practitioners, but by patients. And I think that open access can only be a good thing for the journal.
We do a lot of free access stuff. All our research is free access. And anything else that relates to COVID and Indigenous health is all free access, as I'm sure you're aware. We're partnered with Wiley. Does that have implications?
So Wiley, I think we should just consider them a service provider in this context. So their job is really just to facilitate the publishing. They are part of the negotiated agreement with the Council of Australian University Librarians, which has this program called the Read and Publish Agreement. So and the MJA is part of that. Just to go back to your point about the difference between free and open access, the reason why this is so critical is that free access we know can be withdrawn.
Yes.
And that's something that we saw during the pandemic. We saw that a number of publishers who initially made their work open then have now withdrawn it, put it back behind paywalls. So open access with the appropriate licensing really ensures long-term use of the research. And that's why I think moving to an open access world is so important, because we can really make sure that the research gets used as widely as possible. It can't then be just withdrawn at publisher whim. So I think Wiley will be a good partner in this, and I really look forward to talking with them about how they're going to help support us moving to full open access.
I know in an interview you did yesterday with Medical Republic, you talked about preprints. The MJA did, particularly in 2020 and early 21, we did a lot of preprints, and we've slowly stopped doing them. How important do you think they are, and what problems do they present in terms of peer review, et cetera?
Yeah, so I think the pandemic really showed that preprints are now part of the medical publishing landscape. Before that, there was quite a lot of concern. When I worked at PLOS Medicine, we discussed preprints, and I think the time really then was not really right. We didn't have a preprint server that had the appropriate policies and processes in place to ensure that they were not just publishing things without any scrutiny at all. We now have MedArchive, which, you know, has absolutely flourished during the pandemic, was a really important avenue for publication. And most of those papers went on to be published, but not all of them by any means. So preprints themselves have a role to play. I know the MJA did dip its toe in the water with this, and I think during the pandemic. And again, I think it's really to be congratulated for doing that. But my feeling would be that the opportunity now is to link into international initiatives such as MedArchive and other related preprints, and really liaise with them. So that's what we're seeing. For example, if you're at one of the PLOS journals or the BMJ, you can submit a preprint to MedArchive, and then it can automatically feed into the publishing system of some of those journals.
Cool.
The challenge for the MJA is, I guess, that it has double blind peer review. And of course, you can't really have double blind peer review easily if you've got a preprint that's out there. Mm-hmm. But there are ways of getting around that. And I think I'd like to have a good conversation about what model of peer review works best for the journal. But I do think preprints themselves have extra value. And for example, we know that they increase the impact of the final published research. So they're not to be, you know, researchers should not be worried about them. They are just they're part of the evolution of a paper in many ways. You know, papers are no longer this final published thing. You should think about all versions of a paper of having equal value potentially.
I'm chatting today with Professor Ginny Barber, who will be taking over as Editor-in-Chief of the journal and Insight Plus on the 23rd of January, 2023. If you're enjoying this episode and would like to hear more, you can subscribe to our feed via your favourite podcast platform just by searching for Medical Journal of Australia and hitting the magic button. Our back catalogue of episodes can be found at mja.com.au/podcasts, where they are all free to access. Back to our chat. Indigenous health. We're in the middle of a debate about the way we publish Indigenous health research. And I wondered what your views were on what we should be doing with Indigenous health research and how we should be publishing that work.
I mean, first off, just to say I'm absolutely not an expert in this area. So my first port of call would be to talk with people who are experts in this area, particularly Indigenous researchers themselves and those who work in Indigenous health. I would very much want to find out from them what they think the MJA should be doing. And I know that the MJA has just set up a subgroup of the Editorial Advisory Group to advise them on that. So that would be my first group of people that I'd like to talk with. I think that publishing on Indigenous health is incredibly important. The journal needs to reflect the health priorities of Australia. Mm. And that was one of the things that I talked about when I applied for this job. I feel very strongly that we have to turn the focus on areas that really need attention. So I would love to work with the right people to make sure that we're publishing research that has the highest impact in that area. And I'd take advice from, you know, suitably qualified people. I think it's a really high priority for the journal.
Is it your view that we should be tackling big picture items, climate change, open access, as you say? Should we be focusing on those as much as we focus on, you know, frontline patient outcome research, et cetera?
I think you can do all of that. I think that, yes, we should absolutely take the big picture. I mean, we should be looking, for example, what are the major causes of death in Australia? You know, where's the burden of disease? And I really like the idea, and I've done this in the past, of mapping what you're trying to push for publishing to those areas. I mean, that requires going out to the medical research community and the publishing community and encouraging them to submit their papers to the journal. And I'll absolutely be doing that. I would really want the journal to have a strong voice on the big public health issues of our time. I think that's a really important role for a journal. You know, and again, we've done that in the past when I worked at PLOS Medicine. We talked about it as a journal for the world's health priorities. We specifically actually set up a part of the journal called Neglected Tropical Diseases, which went on to be a journal in its own right and turned into one of the most successful things that we ever did. It really turned the spotlight on an area which was only neglected because of lack of funding, but in fact was a huge burden of disease. So I'll absolutely be intending to look at where we should be focusing our priorities.
Certainly if you live on Twitter, there's a big debate going on about what we as a country are doing in terms of COVID-19. Where do you sit in that, and what role should the journal be playing in that debate?
Well, I think the journal should be listening to the experts, and I do see that the medical community is anxious about some of the lifting of the public health restrictions, and I take that very seriously. So I think that we should be reflecting the view of the public health experts in this area and not be afraid to pass that back to politicians if need be. It's not our role to take a political view, it's our role to take a evidence-based view and make sure that that's properly reflected and given adequate exposure. So that's where I would sit on the COVID-19 measures.
Is the MJA going to be your full-time job, or are you continuing to do other roles while you're doing the...
No, it's a 3-day-a-week job, so I will be doing it for that time. And then for the other 2 days, I will be staying with Open Access Australasia. The executive committee very kindly agreed that I can do that. So it'll be a juggling approach, but I do that already. I already do two jobs. At the moment, I work for Open Access Australasia 3 days a week and for the Queensland University of Technology 2 days a week. So I'm dropping the QUT job, but I will be staying with Open Access Australasia. So what that means practically as well is that I have a very strong view about the need for a diversity of approaches to open access. So I support journals, I support repositories, I support us thinking about experimentation in open access publishing. And that is something that I will continue to push for when I work for the MJA. I'll also be wanting to talk about something we often don't think about when it comes to open access, which is equity, not just of equity of access to read research, but equity of access in publishing research. Yeah. And I will want to be sure that as we move to a more open access world, we're not excluding people from publishing, and that will be a very high priority for me.
The group of publications you're going to be responsible for includes Insight Plus, which is our weekly online news magazine. What role do you think Insight Plus can play, and what would you like to see it do going forward?
So I'm really excited that Insight Plus is part of what I'll be responsible for. I'm really, really excited about that. I think it's a really interesting and good, great part of the publication. So I was delighted to know that. I think it has two roles, and I do think amplifying what's in the journal itself and reinterpreting it for a non-medical audience is probably a really key part of it. But it should also have an ability to have a view itself on areas that are outside of the journal. So what's the news from elsewhere? Is there medical news that perhaps won't be research that's published in the journal but should be of interest to an audience? I see those as two complementary parts of Insight Plus.
Is there anything else you want to talk about in terms of where you think the MJA should be going if it's not going there now? And are there things we should be doing that we're not doing now?
Well, one of the things that I think the journal needs to think about is that how can it be really nimble and able to pivot when the next public health emergency hits us? So, you know, we've had COVID, before that we had SARS, and all the journals really was sort of taken by surprise. We should not be in that position now. So I think we should be thinking about where do we need to position the journal? Who do we need to be working with? What experiments should we be doing to really make sure that the journal is in a position to respond to any public health emergency that hits us? I would also love to think about, you know, experimentation, for example, in peer review, in the ways that the journal's managed, just to think about what are opportunities for really making the journal as innovative as it can be. I'm just really excited to be joining the team. Very much looking forward to getting to know the editors and the staff. And I've had a tremendous welcome so far. And I think it's going to be very exciting. I'd really like to ensure that the journal has proper representation from across Australia. So I think that to take a systematic approach to where research is coming from, what the health needs are in all the different states and territories, and to make sure that we're reflecting that adequately.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.